It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into yet another installment of Pound for Pound. I'm Zach Cordova alongside my incredible co-host, Mahdi Dembele. And today we're going to be talking about our reactions to the insane international fight week, which was UFC 303 last weekend. I was in town in Vegas getting to experience the whole week from the UFC Expo to the actual fight. So I got to see all of the craziness up close. But before we get started with that, Mahdi, how are you doing today, my man?
I mean, for a card that came together really at last minute. I mean, we got some incredible storylines, so many to get into. Dan Ige being one, Peyton Talbot, your boy, you want to get into it. I also want to hear about your time at International Fight Week. So, I mean, this is going to be one to remember, especially something that came together at last minute. It's a beautiful marriage.
Oh, definitely, man. It was a crazy week with everything that happened. I mean, like you mentioned, the Dan Ige. Even before that, with Diego Lopez and Ortega originally being set to fight, those guys were taking it on short notice as well. But I mean, just to kind of briefly sum up my week, it was a lot of fun. There was a different energy. There's always a lot of energy when the UFC comes to town. I feel like in Vegas, being the fight capital of the world, when there's something going on there, where there's a big event going on, you can kind of feel it when you're in the city. And it was a really cool feel. I got to see the expo. I met Justin Gaethje and Cody Garbrandt. So I was definitely fanboying a little bit there when I was at the expo. It was a really, really good time, though. I got to see the weigh-in ceremony, the press conference, and then eventually the fight, which that arena is always on fire every time there's a UFC event down there. I think the entire arena, especially, just goes to show how big out of the star Alex Pereira is now.
Yeah.
But during his walkout, you know, when he does the arrow thing and he screams, the whole arena, including myself, even yelled with him. And as much as I was a fan of both guys in the main event, it was so cool rooting for Alex in that main event and just being there in person. It's always a different feel than just seeing it on TV. That energy in the building is always just unreal. But to get started, I think we should immediately talk about the prelims, which happened, which this was actually a pretty decent prelim card. And to start off, we saw the retirement of one of the pioneers of women's MMA, Michelle Waterson Gomez. Fought her last fight this weekend at UFC 303. She did lose a unanimous decision. However, that shouldn't take away from the incredible career she's had this far, from an atomweight champion, I think at Invicta before the UFC, and then moving into the UFC and fighting at 115 and being in that top 15 for, I think, her entire career she's been in the UFC. So even though the record and in the loss this past weekend may not reflect it, Michelle Waterson Gomez has been an absolute legend to the sport. And Mahdi, do you have anything to say about it?
I mean, training out of the legendary gym of Jackson Wink, which I also believe, if I'm not mistaken, also trained John Jones. Michelle Waterson Gomez, I mean, the Karate Hottie is her nickname there. I mean, over 30 fights in her career. I mean, a submission artist. You look towards the end, right? You see that she has 5 losses, especially that last one, Gillian Robertson, which was not a good loss there. It's almost like you appreciate when they go out at the right time. And when they realize to themselves, they have that full circle moment, like, I'm probably done in this. But if we want to recognize Michelle Waterson Gomez at her best, I would say probably 2017, around that. You saw her fights, her war against Paige Namajunas, and you saw the Paige Van Sant fight, and you saw Angela Magana fight. I mean, that's when she was absolutely at her best. She was all over the ESPN cover magazine, and I mean, her impact, it can't go without mention. Michelle Waterson Gomez, I mean, one of the pioneers of the women's strawweight division, especially at a time when Dana wasn't looking to have smaller divisions for both men and women. She was one of the reasons why those divisions sticked around. She fought Karolina, the Polish, of course. I believe she also fought Joanna, if I'm not Jan Jacek as well. I mean, a
And she
deep
may have, yeah.
resume. Yeah, Carla Esparza, Angela Hill. I mean, these are legends in their own right. And there goes Michelle Waterson Gomez in the ring with them. So, hats off to an amazing career. And she went out at the right time.
Definitely. You know, a mother in the UFC, having her daughters and everything, she's an inspiration to not just women everywhere, but to everyone, I feel like. I feel like you can learn a lot about just being a strong person and being strong-willed and setting your mind to doing something just from watching her career. I was always excited to see a Michelle Waterson Gomez fight, and I was rooting so hard for her on Saturday. Unfortunately, she did lose that decision, but it just came down to grappling, and Gillian Robertson was just a better grappler on the night. But moving to the next fight, we saw the future, I believe, of the UFC. Peyton Talbot undefeated coming in to fight Yannis Gomori. And I mean, we didn't even get a chance to nothing. I didn't even get a chance to maybe get a snack, even take a bite of a snack by the time this one is over. 18 seconds is all it took for Peyton Talbot to knock out Yannis Gomori with one of the most clean 1-2s I have seen. And I think every time we've seen him in the octagon now, I think this is what, his third fight now in the UFC. The other two were at the Apex. This was his debut in front of a crowd. And every single time he's been in there, he's just looked better and better. And to me, he is maybe one of the best prospects right now for the UFCs. And he's drawn a lot of the Sean O'Malley comparisons, which he admitted that he does not like. He wants that fight at some point. But it's a little hard not to draw the comparisons when you see the super, super crisp striking and power and precision, everything that he brings to the octagon. I mean, and in this performance, 18 seconds is all it took. Marty, what did you see on Saturday?
I mean, to tell you the truth, he's a switch hitter, 71-inch reach, 5'10", 135 pounds, and he's electric. Like, we talk about guys who are just like flashy in the ring, whether it be a Jiří or a Michel Pereira. He has a little bit of that power in both hands. And I'm not even concerned about what happened at 303. I'm still thinking about what he did to Cameron Simon. And Simon, I was a huge fan of. He trained with Dricus du Plessis, his fellow South African. And really, no one could touch him at 135. He's young. I believe he's only 23 years of age, 9-1 up until that point, up until he saw Peyton Talbot. And Talbot just put him away. I mean, and when you put away a guy like that, it's like, oh, all guys on me. I love his quotables. He's like, Dana, if you got a bunch of guys, just feed them to me. I mean, he seems to be making moves in the UFC, and he's fun as hell. I mean, he's talking about you got to call your own shots. Like, he obviously wants to be a star. Adrian Yanez fight, which is something that's been going on and on, I would absolutely love to see, because Yanez is a fantastic boxer, one of the best. You saw his fight against Rob Font, one of the best in the UFC. I would like, he's a star in the making. Like, jump on the train now before it leaves the station.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. And I've already jumped on the train because I told you, I keep telling this to everybody. I've talked about it this week. I think Peyton Talbot may be a champion within the next 3 years. I think he's that good. We've seen a little bit of his grappling, and he seems to be very solid on the ground. His takedown defense is good. He's gotten up every time he's been taken down before the UFC and in the UFC. I was watching some of his fights from, I can't remember the promotion now that I think of it. But some of his fights before the UFC, he puts on a performance every time he's out there. And he's someone who I just see as a very natural fighter. He just looks so comfortable when he's in the octagon. And for being so young and being so skilled, you'd think you'd see, especially with all the hype and pressure on him, he walked into the octagon on Saturday as a minus 1800 favorite. And it doesn't seem to faze him in any way. He just kind of takes it as it is. And I almost want to call him our Gen Z, the next Gen Z wave of MMA fighters now hitting the UFC. And I think we're finally starting to see the effects of MMA becoming a more popular sport. We're starting to see guys start younger and younger and younger, and the skill level is just going to keep increasing. And I think Peyton Talbot is a reflection of the newer generation of fighters who are starting fighting when they're much, much younger. And he just looks so fluid when he's in the octagon. I hope he gets that Adrian Yanez fight.
Yeah.
We will see. He took zero damage in this fight. So seeing him back in the octagon sooner than later would be definitely a cool thing. But I cannot wait for any fight news on him because I think the future is very bright for him.
And just to jump in really quickly, Zach, the promotion you're thinking about is Firepower Promotions. That was back in 2022. So we're talking about a guy who's, what, 22, maybe even 21 years of age when...
25, a little older.
Oh, no, he's 25 now, but that fight was back
then. Oh, back then, yeah.
Exactly. So he was 21, 22, and he was still kicking you know what and taking names. And a lot of these champions are getting older, are getting younger. To your point, you think about Ilya, you think about a Sugar Sean. I mean, 25, 26 seems to be about the stride that we're hitting there. So, I mean, yeah, it's a young guy's game now.
Definitely, definitely. But moving on from that fight, I think we got to talk about the featured prelim now, which was seeing Joe Pyfer back in the octagon against Marc-Andre, I'm going to pronounce the last name wrong, Barrial, I believe.
Better than me.
It doesn't even matter because Pyfer put him out in one round, and I mean out cold, stiff as a board. And Barrial was talking about earlier in the week saying, I want to find out what that power is about. Everyone's talking about the Joe Pyfer power. I want to see up close. Well, he found out, and he found out in one of the worst ways. Joe Pyfer gets him up against the cage, lands a shot, which I believe was through the guard, just another testament to his power, and knocks him out cold. And it was a really big bounce back performance for Joe Pyfer after coming off of a very tough loss. And I think it was a Fight Night main event. A lot of expectations were high for him, and he didn't necessarily perform. Well, does this one put him back on your radar, Marty?
I mean, Joe Pyfer, you think of him, and it was really the wrestling that got to me, right? I was like, who's gonna be able to wrestle with this guy? I mean, I believe an Olympic level wrestler, if I'm not mistaken, definitely D1 in college. I mean, like at that point, and I thought he was one dimensional, but when you're able to knock a guy out through his guard, and this is a guy, just to be, Body Bags is his nickname. This is a guy that I bet against a lot of times. I believe one of the very, very first episodes of Pound for Pound, I forget which fight it was. It escapes me as of right now. It was against Mir Skart. Yes, that's the fight. GM3, one of the highest submission rates in the history of the UFC. I said he was going to lose that fight. He goes on and he proves me wrong, and he's just getting better and better and better. When you're able to knock a guy out through the guard up, and you're able to break it and get to him, it's almost like what Tyson Fury said about Deontay Wilder. He was jabbing up, then he put his guard up, and then he felt Deontay's lead hand, not even his right hand, his lead hand. And he said he felt it break his guard and it touched his chin. And then he realized he's in trouble. If Joe Pyfer gets to a point where he's learning submission holds and his stand-up gets even better mixed with his wrestling, he's a dangerous name at middleweight. I mean, it's only up from him. Good size and a really, really good reach. I mean, and a good amateur background and a good amateur pedigree. I mean, like, he has so much to build on. So I'm excited to see where he goes now.
Definitely. And aside from the wrestling, the power on him is just unreal. I think he tried that punch machine back at the UFC Apex or the PI in Vegas where Francis Ngannou set his record.
Yeah.
And then Pyfer went in and actually broke that record. And then that record was destroyed even more by Alex Pereira, which we're going to talk about in just a bit. But Joe Pyfer is a guy who seems like he can put anybody out who's in front of him. And that is very, very big in a middleweight division where we're seeing a lot of powerful strikers come up, a lot of guys who are good at throwing bombs. And the thing about Pyfer is he has that well-rounded part of his game where he can take it to the ground if he needs to. And once he gets into that top 15 of fighters on this roster, that's definitely going to benefit him. And I'm just starting to wonder now, a lot is going on at middleweight. Are we ever going to see any crossing paths between maybe a Bo Nickel and a Joe Pyfer, something like that in the future? I think that certainly makes for a very, very fun matchup.
No, Bo's this scare. I mean, like, when you talk about, oh, God, wow. That's going to be a very, very messy stand-up, and that's usually the formula. When you have two guys with really, really good pedigrees in wrestling, you're going to get ugly stand-up, i.e., Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington. I would be excited for that. I think Bo Nickel at this point is probably the scariest guy in the world. But again, I'm interested for Joe Pyfer. They're around the same age. I mean, like, same size, even down to the size 6'1", about 75-inch reach for both guys. But that's going to be fun. That's going to be really, really good.
Definitely.
And yeah, I'm excited for that one.
And we keep talking about the future is bright for the UFC, and this middleweight division has already been on fire in the past 2 years, ever since Izzy knocked out or Alex comes in, takes the belt from Izzy. Izzy takes it back via brutal knockout. And then we got Sean Strickland coming in here and shocking the world. And then a very close decision between him and Dricus. And now we're getting the Dricus Duplessis versus Israel Adesanya later this year. This division has been on fire. And the younger talent as well is starting to come to light. And we're starting to see more and more. So I am really excited for the future of the middleweight division. But we're going to go one division down. And we're going to talk about the first fight of the main card, Ian Garry versus Michael Venom Page. And Ian Garry edged out a decision. And we talked about this fight is either going to be a barn burner or a super boring one. And, well, we got one of the boring ones. Ian Garry decided he wanted to grapple with MVP. And I don't blame him, because he that is a terrifying man to stand in front of, because that striking is unreal. So what did you see in this first fight of the main card, buddy?
I thought we were going to get fireworks. I mean, this is a higher upside fight. I've said a lot about MVP. I mean, like, even as an older guy, he's aging like fine wine because he's still slick as ever. You saw in the Kevin Holland fight, he's able to frustrate guys. That in-and-out attack where he's slick and he could fight off the back foot and come in and strike you like a serpent. Ian Garry's much of the same thing. I like his stand-up. I think his grappling is excellent. So I thought we were going to get a bang-bang fight here. It could go either way, but it was really one-sided. I mean, Ian Machado Garry, again, young, 26 years old, and really just put the older guy away. I mean, I wasn't the highest on this fight. A bit disappointed, yes. Solid enough performance. I say solid. For my expectations, I thought it was going to be a bit better, but Ian Garry comes out with the decision, and it's on to the next, I guess, for him.
So you think that it was completely one-sided? Dana White actually in the press conference after the fight said he thought it was a draw. And a lot of people on MMA Twitter were weighing in thinking that maybe it was a draw. Maybe they think Garry just barely won it.
More active.
I'm not sure if I agree. I mean, what do you think further into it, to dive into it?
I think he was a bit more, I don't even know if active is the correct word, but it looked to me from where I was sitting that he seemed a bit more dominant. He was picking his shots a little bit better. You saw the mistakes by Michael Venom Page. I believe he threw, I believe it was a front kick that got checked and then he got thrown onto the ground. I think Garry just made less mistakes, if that makes sense. I think that's where I'm coming from with this one.
Yeah, and I think an important thing to note when watching this fight was Ian Garry did not really throw any combinations. I feel like it was single shots. He was being very careful with picking and choosing when he went in with MVP, because he's so explosive. He's so dangerous. He can come out with the spinning elbow or anything at any time. And I think Garry was very, very cautious about that. And he spent a lot of time in this past training camp training with the former lightweight champion, Charles Du Bronx, down in Brazil. And you can kind of tell that it paid off, man. He immediately took the back in the first round, almost got a choke. And the grappling for the rest of the fight, he just looked way, way better. He exposed MVP's very, very lackadaisical takedown defense and his very poor defensive grappling game. And I think that Garry just took the smart way to a win. He's undefeated now. He's very close to defending a title. Yes, he would have loved to go out there and getting an electric finish, because just like you always say, Mahdi, it's not who you beat, it's how you beat them. The type of taste you leave in I guess, Dana White's mouth or the matchmaker's mouth when they're leaving the arena that night is, oh, Garry got a crazy knockout. He should be next to the title. Well, he goes out there and grapples, smartly wins the fight, and is a very close one. And maybe now it's not as clear cut as it could have been if he went out there and got a big finish. Now, maybe I think the fight to make would be Ian Garry versus Shavkat for the number one contender match.
Yeah.
Winner of that challenges for the belt, taking on the winner of Leon and Bilal that happens now here at the end of this month, which is another story, but that's not a story for another time. Mahdi knows my not the biggest fan of Bilal Muhammad. But
Bilal.
Moving on, we're talking about number one contenders matches and very, 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 very consequential fights. And Mayra Buena Silva and Macy Chiasson had a little bit of a weird stoppage, depending on how you look at it. That cut on Bueno Silva's face was gnarly. Like, it was bad. And just seeing it in person, as soon as they showed it up on the Jumbotron, I think everybody in the arena gasped. Like, it was just like a shock because that cut was really bad. She wanted to keep fighting, but the doctor had to protect her from herself and told the referee to stop it. So we got a stoppage in the first or second round, I believe. And it's a tough one for Buena Silva because she just fought for the title. She loses this match now. That pushes her further away from the belt again to trying to get back to a title shot. And maybe Chiasson might be up next in that weight division, depending on how you look at it. Maybe it could be Juliana Pena challenging next for the bantamweight belt. Mm-hmm. But who knows? It's a division where things are up for grabs right now. And losing a fight via doctor stoppage for Bueno Silva just seems super, super negative for her in terms of trying to get back to that title shot. So do you agree with the stoppage, Mahdi, with the doctor stoppage here? Or?
I mean, doctor stoppages are always like a tough one, I believe. Because I did see the cut. These are so tough to judge. I mean, like, getting a straight answer for a doctor stoppage is like people look at you and they ask you, are you a doctor? So you probably wouldn't know, but I do have common sense. And what my common sense is telling me is that she probably could have continued on with the fight. Me personally, not the doctor, I'm looking at the cut right now. I mean, like, it's in a gnarly place, specifically above the eye, especially above the eye. I remember Jorge Masvidal had a cut specifically on his eyelid and he wanted to keep fighting. That's obviously a no-no because if you rip your eyelid off, that's a different game. But it seems to be more on the brow, if I'm not mistaken. I'm looking at it, that's more so brow-like. I mean, like, I'm thinking back to other instances, Zhang Yonjaychek, where she got a huge hematoma. Like, I mean, what's the discrepancy there? Because maybe a hematoma could be something more dangerous than a cut. I mean, like, these things are so tit for tat that if it was me personally, I would have let it go on. I really would have let it go on. I mean, like, her agency and her volition were there. And I think that she was okay enough to fight. These things are always tough to judge because obviously doctor expertise and the regular human eye are two different things. But from where I'm sitting, I would have let it go on. And a major decision like that, it's almost like calling a foul with like 3 seconds left in the tie game to put one team on the free throw line. Like, you're determining the outcome of it. It's a gnarly cut, yes, but you could probably patch that up. I mean, like, it's tough. But from where I'm sitting, I think it was okay.
It's tough to say, man, because being there and just seeing it, and even the reaction from the crowd and seeing how deep that cut was, ugly. I almost feel like it was tough to let that fight go on because she was taking a lot of elbows, and what caused the cut was an elbow, and she took one more there. It could have been a lot, lot worse. And I think at that point, you just really got to look out for the safety of the fighter. Yes. Do I think she could have gone on? Definitely. She's a fighter. She's got a lot of heart. She fought for her title. Like, there's a reason she's in this position. But sometimes I think you got to protect some of these fighters from themselves. And that cut to me looked very, very deep. And just the positioning and the way the fight was going in terms of the landing, the elbows and such, I only think it would have gotten worse.
I think that's a good point. I do want to play devil's advocate for you. I remember a boxing match earlier this year. Sorry to bring up boxing again. Tim Zhu, Sebastian Fundora. Tim Zhu was obviously winning that fight. And it's one of the best fights that you really go back to. And like, this is old school boxing, really, really good fight. Tim Zhu was winning the fight. Sebastian Fundora is the bigger guy, like 6'6". He comes in, he cuts him. And it was one elbow. Like, so now that's not the situation here. Obviously, it wasn't one elbow. She was getting buried with elbows. But like, what do you say to something like, again, a Joanna, like hematoma? Like, what are the decisions there, Zach? If I'm asking you, like you're stopping the fight for like a very ugly gash. But the thing about cuts is they look a lot worse than they actually are. Whereas a huge hematoma on the side of your face could be something of bigger implication. So if you were a judge, Zach, like how do you go about judging them?
I mean, it's tough to say because I feel like every doctor is different, especially based on a commission or a state's commission. It could be different. I'm not totally sure how they look at it and determine whether they're able to continue or not. There's been some weird ones where some fights have been able to go on, even through bad cuts or seemingly bad injuries because of the implications of a fight. And this one, I feel like, had pretty big implications. So I wouldn't have been shocked if it would have went on. I would have understood the reason to let Bueno Silva try to fight. And if she can't defend herself or defend that cut at least, then you could stop it. I think that's more reasonable. But at the same time, like I said, MMA is such a quick sport and something could happen very quickly. Very, and very just quickly. Like that, she takes another elbow. The way the fight was going, she takes another elbow in that same spot. It could have gotten a lot worse.
That's very fair.
So I think the stoppage was justifiable. However, I would have liked to see maybe her given a chance to defend herself at some point, or maybe given a chance to maybe try to give her a warning to cover it up, maybe. But I don't know. I think it was justifiable.
Go bang, bang, these type of things. They could go
exactly. Opposite, really. But moving on, Roman Dolidze was also stepping in on short notice, which this fight was originally Jamal Hill versus Khalil Rountree. And then Rountree gets injured. So then we get Jamal Hill versus Carlos Olberg. Another very exciting fight. Well, Jamal Hill gets injured. So then we get Anthony Smith versus Carlos Olberg. Well, that doesn't happen because Olberg pulls out about a week before. And then we get Roman Dolidze stepping in, moving up a weight class from middleweight to take on Anthony Smith in a very late replacement. And surprisingly, to my surprise at least, Dolidze comes in on about a week and a half notice, up a weight class, and he wins a decision against Anthony Smith. And this just feels like another one of Anthony Smith's just not being consistent kind of performances. And we see him every now and then where he looks pretty decent. He looks like he could be at the top of, maybe at the top of the division. He is one of the best gatekeepers, I can say, in the UFC.
Yeah.
But he comes in here this past weekend and just did not perform. He did not seem to be there, and maybe it was the short notice or whatever, but I don't know. Anthony Smith's not going to use that as an excuse. He's a fighter through and through.
Fighter.
But I think maybe just taking this on short notice against this certain opponent just wasn't the smartest decision for him, and I think he's just pushed way out of the title picture at this point, especially after dropping a fight a middleweight.
I mean, like, at that point, he was ranked number 10. And just to be clear, Zach, I want to reiterate something you just said. Anthony Smith is a fighter. Like, I remember when John Jones kneed him in the head, he could have got a DQ and could have won the belt at light heavyweight. But he said, no, I want to continue on and I want to win. So I know what's in Anthony Smith's heart. And again, he's one of the best gatekeepers, not just at 205, but in the UFC. I mean, the guy has nearly, I want to say, what, 60 fights in his career? I mean, like, he's been around for a hell of a long time, but he just can't string them together. You got Jimmy Crew, and then Ryan Spann wins, and then Magomed Ankalaev losses. And Ankalaev is a very, very good fighter. Johnny Walker losses. Khalil Rountree losses. Like, he just can't string them together. And I mean, like, I know that last fight was a decision against Dolidze, but if we're really looking at, like, Roman had the bigger moments. Like, Anthony had his moments as well, and both guys had really, really good moments. But if you look at whose moments were gooder, if I may say, it was really Roman. And Roman really put him away. You saw Anthony Smith really shell up, and it's like, yeah, much of the same old story for Anthony Smith. I mean, like, he'll win a couple of fights here and there, but he just seems to be stuck. And for a guy who finds himself, who used to find himself in a ring with the likes of John Jones, is now, like, in the ocean, just going wherever the current takes him. So,
yeah. And I feel bad for him because this was originally a fight that wasn't supposed to be his. And he steps on short notice, and then the fight changes for him several times as well. So it was just a big, confusing mess, it felt like. And Anthony Smith, unfortunately, kind of got the short end of the stick, except he was taking on somebody who usually does fight at middleweight. And what kind of confused me is Dolidze looked bigger than Anthony Smith on fight night.
Anthony Smith is the bigger guy, 2 inches of height and weight as well. So
yeah, and Dolidze looked like the bigger man in the octagon for some reason. And so who knows? Maybe this move to light heavyweight on a whim may become a permanent thing for Roman Dolidze. I'm not sure, but a win over Anthony Smith in the top 10 should put him around there. So maybe not the worst decision to maybe decide to move up to light heavyweight and get into those rankings. But you also know who's at the top of that division, Alex Pereira. And I wouldn't want to personally move up and fight him either. But like I said before, middleweight is stacked. So what do you do?
What do you do?
But moving on to the next fight, we're going to go ahead and talk about Dan Ige versus Diego Lopez, which in itself was a miracle that happened. 4 hours notice is how long it took for Dan Ige to step in for this fight. We got weigh-ins. First of all, Diego Lopez weighs in at 145, and Brian Ortega calls him up that morning at 5 a.m. to tell him, hey, man, I'm not going to make a weight today. Let's do 55. Diego Lopez agrees, says, I'll do 55, rehydrates, gets on the scale. Both fighters make 55.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to the morning of the fight, and Brian Ortega calls up the UFC telling them that he has a fever that he cannot get rid of, and there's no way he can fight that night. So we get Dan Ige on the phone with 4 hours. Prelims are already going on. Dan Ige, I think, said he was getting a massage at home with the fights on his TV. Call him up, and he says, I'll be there. Co-main event. Let's do it. Comes in, weighs in at 65, which, again, Diego Lopez was scheduled to fight at 145, weighed in at 145 on Friday morning. And here he is in the co-main event fighting Dan Ige at 165 pounds. So both of these guys, absolute warriors, all props to them. They are true, true fighters. Yeah. Just to go through it, I mean, just props to Danny Ige, Diego Lopez. But we did get Diego Lopez continuing the hype train, continuing the streak. And now I think breaking into the top 10, I'm not sure what his official ranking came out as yet, but I believe he should be around the top 10 now in that featherweight division. And it was just an interesting fight. It's kind of what you expect out of a last-minute fight. So what did you see in this co-main event, Marty?
That is the perfect – I believe if – like, I'm thinking if Dana could have it like that every single time, he would have it like that every single time. And it's the mentality of the UFC to put on an event no matter what, which really, really draws me. Again, if we're comparing it to boxing, puts on 3-4 events a year. Dana's working all year. I mean, and he got guys on retainer, and props to Dan Ige. I mean, like, the warrior spirit to come in last 4 hours notice, and you're able to get in there against a guy who has a rocket ship attached to his back and Diego Lopez. And Diego handling business. I think more credit goes to him because just handling business no matter who's put in front of you. And that's all that you can ask for when you're a UFC fan. I mean, like, it doesn't matter who's in the cage against you. I mean, like, just go out there and beat him. Just go out there and beat him. And with these implications, I think both guys have a lot to hang their hat on. Both guys just handling business and getting in there. I mean, like, the implications obviously go to the winner. So it's going to be Diego Lopez because he just obliterated the guy who's in front of him, whether it was Brian Ortega or Dan Ige. So he'll have we'll tip our hat to him, but also to Dan Ige. I mean, like, who knows what fights he'll get with it? Because if you satisfy the MMA gods, Dana White, maybe he will return the favor in kind. So, I mean, like, both guys benefit from this, and they're able to put on the show. So it's really a win-win. And again, if Dana's able to have it like this every time, he'll have it like this every single time. So kudos to that fight.
Yeah, I mean, a true fighter's fighter. Anytime, anywhere, any weight. Both of these guys, just the definition of that. And Dan Ige, I mean, just to come in there and save this co-main event, I thank God for him because we talked about in last week's episode, I really wanted to see Diego Lopez fight in person. And I thankful for him because if he doesn't step up, I don't get to see Diego in person. Yeah. That fight doesn't go on. And according to Diego Lopez, Dana White told him he was going to pay him whether or not he accepted that fight. If he wanted to, he could have said no. He could have said, okay, 165 is too much for me. I'm out. And he would have gotten paid his show money and his win money and could have gone home happy. But instead, he decided to go on with the fight, take the risk, and he gets the win, continues the win streak. And I've already talked about how bright I think the future is for Diego Lopez, but even more now after this, I think that we really get to see who he is as a person, as a fighter. We get to see his true heart and his true willingness to compete. And I think he's ready now for the top of that division. I think that he'll get his wish. And called out both Volkanovski and I can't remember the other name. He wants the fight back with Ortega.
Oh.
But if Ortega's not able to do featherweight, he said he wants Volk. So that's an interesting one for me. But for Dan Ige, Dana White told him he could have whatever he wants. Especially when it comes to being at the Sphere. And that is exactly what Dan Ige wants, is to fight at the Sphere. So we'll see what kind of fight announcement we get out of that. He was actually on Twitter calling out Ryan Garcia for the to fight at the Sphere, which Ryan Garcia is in his own mess right now. Yeah. So who knows whatever happens with that. But Ryan Garcia has been saying for a while he wants to try MMA. He wants to step into the octagon. So Dan Ige called him out. Dana White told him, hey, I'll do whatever you want after you did that for me. So who knows? Dan Ige versus Ryan Garcia at the Sphere apparently may be a real thing. I guess we'll find out when as we get closer to it. But major, major props to both of those guys. Diego Lopez coming out with the decision win. Yeah, he should be in the top 10 of featherweight this week. We'll see, but very, very exciting future for Diego Lopez, and think his next fight's in the top five. And who knows, after that, a potential title shot may be there for him. So very, very excited to see what goes on with that. But we get into the main event, Alex Pereira versus Jiří Procházka, the second time they fought, the second time they both stepped up on short, or I guess not, the first one wasn't necessarily short notice. They were already scheduled to fight co-main here in New York.
Yeah.
But Jones steps out. These guys step up to save the event, take over the main event spot. And here they are, this time on short notice, saving yet another major event coming in on International Fight Week. 2 weeks' notice for both guys. Obviously, we know what happened last time. Alex Pereira knocks him out. And we get a little bit of a controversial stoppage. A lot of everyone thought that it was early, that Jiří was still in it. Well, all questions were answered this past weekend when Alex knocked him out with one of the cleanest head kicks I think I've ever seen in the beginning of the second round, first strike thrown. And this happens after a first round where it seems like Alex was in a far better space, maybe not just cardio-wise, but also striking everything. He just seems like he was so far ahead. And to end the round, he catches Jiří with that same left hook. Drops him right at the buzzer, right at the bell. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Buzzer would be a basketball term. Drops him right at the bell. And Jiří gets up, goes into the corner, looks a little wobbly. And then comes in the second round and just takes this head kick clean and knocks him straight out onto the ground. Fight maybe this time. Last time it was controversial because the fight was stopped a little early. This time it seemed like it was stopped a little late. Herb Dean was just watching Alex pounce on top of him and drop unanswered strike after unanswered strike. And I really felt for Jiří, but I think the question is now here. It's finally here. Is Alex Pereira the biggest star in the UFC? Is he?
I have to say yes. I have to say yes. I feel like, especially on this podcast, a lot of guys being trying to hold it back from him. But at this point, at a certain point, it's like, you know what's coming. It's almost like Gervonta Tank Davis. I mean, even if you feel like you're ahead, you're not. Are you really ahead? Do you really feel like you're in charge? Bane from Batman. That's the quote that he used. The left hook is just, I mean, because it's so much more than just a puncher's chance. I mean, when you talk about, and this is more of a basketball term too, bones, like a guy's like natural physical attributes. When I look at boxing, I can tell you probably the guy with the best bones ever may be Deontay Wilder, 6'7", lean and mean, and the biggest right hand on the face of the planet. But Alex Pereira is more of the same, 6'4", lean, strong. Even guys his size, he makes them look extremely small, and he's the biggest puncher in the MMA, and you know it's coming, but you can't stop it. Almost like Kareem Skyhook. It only goes one direction, but you know it's coming, and you can't do a damn thing about it. It's so much to the point that we have to start talking about Alex Pereira more so in the light of Conor McGregor. I know he's not the personality. I know that he's not the charmer or the character, rather. But I mean, like, he's a guy that Dana's always saying, we don't co-promote. You better co-promote with Alex Pereira. That's the star power that he has. I mean, like, you could jump into boxing and you could probably get a fight against a heavyweight somewhere there. Like Alex Pereira is so much bigger than mixed martial arts at this point. And I hate to say that because I'm a purist. I believe that the art form comes first. But when you have a special character like Alex Pereira, where he's already a champ in, what, two divisions, going on three, let's see what happens at heavyweight. If he beats John Jones, dispatches Aspinall, whatever happens there, then you just have to expand your horizons with this guy. The sky is truly the limit. Like, scratch that. There is no limit for Alex Pereira. He's an MMA god at this point.
That's all out the window now, because whatever limit we first thought was there, yeah, like, is just, he's just blown through that ceiling over and over and over again.
Fights?
And
12 fights?
And he's, yeah, 13 fights now, and he is now a double champ in the UFC who has defended his title. That was his first defense. Second defense. First one was against Jamal Hill now. Mm-hmm. It's happened so quick, I can't even recount it perfectly. But he's just taken over the UFC and bounces back from that loss to Izzy and just goes on to become an absolute menace in another division. I think Izzy even said it in the press conference afterwards. Good luck, light heavyweights, because he's a problem to deal with. And he has been exactly that. He's been unstoppable, it seems like, at light heavyweight. And I think if he's able to go up and get that third belt, it especially if he does get it, and I think we're getting closer and closer to it by the day, because I think Jon Jones realizes that there is no bigger fight in UFC history than that fight. And I think Jones looks at it pretty favorably because of Alex's lack of grappling.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he thinks he could take him down, especially with the size. So maybe he does stick around after Stipe and wants to fight with Alex Pereira to make maybe the biggest payday for himself, but also the biggest fight in UFC history. And I just want to say, if Alex gets that done, I think that this debate is over. And I don't think that anyone could really argue it. Alex may be one of the greatest, not one of, he may be the greatest UFC or just MMA fighter ever. And it'd be unreal to see, but I also want to go back to, you talk about the personality, and I've talked about this for a long time, because I think that everyone wants to look at the Conor McGregor blueprint and say, okay, you got to have like a loud mouth and talk a lot of trash and be disrespectful to whoever you're fighting. Just have a loud personality to be a star. But I think Alex Pereira's kind of changed that. This is a guy that I'm starting to learn a little bit of Portuguese just by watching him so much. Mm-hmm. I see the guy everywhere now. And I think that his personality is so shy, but yet so relatable to so many people, that it attracts more of a fan base. People love him for who he is and the way he acts and the way he talks. The Chama is everywhere. Everybody's saying Chama. I saw a video with Kristaps Porzingis the other day celebrating at a restaurant. Some guy goes up to him and goes, Chama. And Kristaps responds and goes, Chama. Everybody universally now knows Chama because of Alex Pereira. That's insane. He has become such a huge star. I never could have imagined that he would be this big. And it's crazy to see him just do it so quickly. And now moving on to what is going to be his third title defense after this, likely happening this year. He's talking about it. Didn't take much damage in this fight. He already came in with the two broken toes. So I'd like to see him take a little bit of time off, let himself be recovered and healed up, because we have seen, especially recently, champions make quick turnarounds and try to be as active as they could and end up slipping up, such as Volk or even Izzy. Izzy loses that first fight against Alex, and even the Sean Strickland fight, and he was incredibly, incredibly active. So I think after stepping in on short notice, saving this event and really making a statement to the entire division, if not the entire MMA world, I think it's time for Alex to take a little bit of time off. I would like to see him fight again later this year, but we'll see. I think he does fight again before the end of the year. I think Ankalaev would be next for him.
Yes.
But
only guy within the top five he didn't fight.
Definitely. And I think that, but I do think the time off would really benefit him in getting fully healthy, because Magomed Ankalaev is a storm in his own right. He is a really, really tough fighter. But according to him, he wants to stand up with Alex. And he said it on Twitter. He said it in interviews. Everyone's asking him, he says, no takedowns. I won't even try to wrestle you. I'm going to stand with him because I want to find out for myself, because I think I'm better. And we've heard the same tune over and over again now for the past three fights he's had. Jamal Hill wanted to stand with him to prove to everybody. Geary wants to stand with him to prove to everybody. You can't do it. You can't stand in front of that man. He sends people into orbit with that left hand. Yeah,
he does. And Zach,
it's crazy to see.
Like, if I could like further expound on the point you made earlier, it's the everyman character. Character. He's humble. He doesn't talk much. He's a rather shy personality. And again, you talk about the Conor blueprint. Guys think you have to be loud and brash and fancy suits and stuff like that. But the everyman, you think about everymans in the history of the UFC, Forrest Griffins and Mark Hunts, guys that seem just like more you and me, not supernovas like you see down the street and it's like, oh my God, but just regular guys and they're doing like supernatural things. Alex Pereira almost gives off that energy, but at the same time, he is a supernova. And it's bringing respect back to the sport, which is really what's intrinsic to martial arts, right? It's a very respectful thing. And it's just a different phenomenon that he's bringing in. So, I mean, the magnetism that he has is just otherworldly there. So I just wanted to get that out. He's an everyman, but then he's a superstar at the same time. It's this weird, like, he's just everything. He's just everything.
He lets his ability in the octagon speak for itself, and he's done it over and over again. And I mean, just to talk about the other side of it now, Geary loses this fight for now the second time to Alex. And this was a rather brutal knockout for him. So I think Geary has a lot to think about now. Yep. He posted a video quickly after. He said, I need to evolve. I need to go back to training and work harder because it's either evolve or I don't fight again. And I think that's a very sharp mentality for Geary to have at this point, because I think he's recognized now that Alex Pereira is the better fighter. He's the superior fighter. And I hate to say it, but I think Geary beats everybody else in this division except for Alex Pereira. And I think that this is just a terrible style of matchup for him. And whether he trains harder or he gets more cardio in or whatever, I don't think that his style is able to beat Alex Pereira unless he makes significant changes to his game. And honestly, at this point, there's been a little bit of talks about, a little rumors about it. I think Yuri's best bet may be to head down to 185 because he could go down there and cause some problems. It was talked about in the past. Now it's come to light a little bit more. His coach was talking about it very recently on some sort of interview, and he brought up that he would like to see Geary at middleweight, but it's a full team's decision, along with Geary's opinion on it being the most important. Mm-hmm. I personally like to see him at 185. I think he would be a monster down there, especially because I feel like it's very the route to the title is very tough for him after losing not just one, but two fights now by knockout to Alex Pereira. Yeah. I would love to see him go down to middleweight, but I don't think this is the end of Geary Prochazka. No. I don't think we've seen the end of him, and I really hope not, because Geary is such a special fighter and special character in the UFC, the Czech Republic samurai, as we know him. Talking about all the magic stuff that happened this week, we didn't even bring that up. But whether it's magic or whatever it is, Alex Pereira is just too good and proves to be too good. And his style just seems yet to be rivaled from anyone besides Izzy. So I'm very curious to see who could give Alex that challenge next.
I mean, if he moves down to middleweight, things could get really, really interesting, because in light heavyweight, it's a one-off. He beats everybody but Alex. But if you go down to middleweight, there's Sean. Drakus could get interesting, because you know Drakus can muck it up. It's Israel Adesanya. There's also guys like a Vittoria Cannon here. So if he's able to callous himself there, I mean, like, he really elevates also in the minds of UFC fans, because I would say not deeper, but he's much closer to a title in light heavyweight, I would say, than middleweight, because there's so many more guys that can make much more things interesting for you. But wherever Geary goes, I mean, like, he's going to get better. And to stay that hungry, even after being a champion, it's like, once you taste it, once you got to taste it again. I mean, like, I'm excited to see where he goes as well. I'm a huge Geary Prochazka fan. I actually picked him to win in the first fight, but diamonds make pressure, and pressure makes diamonds. I always get that confused. And Yuri's a diamond. He's a diamond.
Yeah, definitely, man. And it hurt me to see him lose like that. And I feel like, at least for me, this event, main event, was a lose-lose, because I wanted to see both guys win. I didn't want to see either guy lose, and I didn't want to see Geary get knocked out the way he did. He looked so sad when he was standing there after the fight. So I felt really bad for him, and I think there was kind of that realization set in for him. Like, this guy's better than me. And I think it comes down to styles, and I think the way that Geary fights, way he jumps in with his hands down a lot, he's putting himself up close, getting awkward angles. Every angle he puts himself in, Alex Pereira is able to counter perfectly almost every time, and he's been able to land that left hook now twice cleanly, and that's what worries me for Geary, is if he could ever learn or figure out how to stop it. And if you can't stop Alex's left hook, it's really nothing else he could do. So very interesting stuff going on. We will see shortly, hopefully, or at least within the coming months, what is next for both Jiří Prochazka and the champion Alex Pereira. Alex Pereira maybe be fighting Ed by the end of this year. We'll see. He didn't take much damage, but it's all up to chance now, I guess. We'll see. We'll see what Dana puts together. Yeah. I do think Ankalaev is next, so we'll see what happens there. Maybe he makes a return down here to New York, heading to MSG. That'd certainly be exciting. John Jones, by the way, has a little bit of news here. Posted the other day. I can't remember the exact date, but he did confirm he will be fighting in November. I think the first weekend of November, which I believe would be the MSG card because that is around the time the UFC does it each year. So seems like we'll see John Jones back in action finally against Stipe Miocic, his legacy fight back at MSG in November. So I am very excited for that. But before we wrap up this episode, I do want to bring up that we do have a very special guest joining us next week. So be sure to catch that. Minty Betts will be joining the show. I met her down while I was in Vegas at the UFC Expo. She works on the UFC broadcast team. You've probably seen her on a fight night. If you've watched it, especially one of the Apex cards, she's always putting out picks. So be ready for that. Tune in next week for that episode. But that'll just about do it for this episode of Pound for Pound. I've been Zach Cordova, joined by my incredible co-host, Mati Dembele. We will see you next week. Thank you.